Green-eyed lady, lovely lady, strolling slowly towards the sun. Green-eyed lady, ocean lady, soothing every raging wave that comes. Green-eyed lady, passion's lady, lonely. lady, windswept lady, rules the night, the waves, the sand.
Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha. Welcome to another edition of White Wellness. Today is July 13th, 2020, broadcasting out of New York for the American National Radio Network. That song right there was Green Eyed Lady by the band Sugarloaf way back in 1970. I thought that was just kind of a groovy cosmic tune, so I played that song for the broadcast. And the reason I picked it is because this broadcast is going to focus on ladies' issues, not just so much issues, more like ladies' health and wisdom, not whiz-dom, which is most of the things you see out there, especially in all the periodicals and publications that are really, well, just a bunch of zogwash. Of course, I didn't know that when I was younger. I wish I did. But this broadcast is going to be mainly focusing on ladies' stuff. It doesn't mean it's only for ladies. Always a good idea for men to listen to this type of information, too, so they can understand women more. Isn't that a great thing? If we could understand each other a bit more, perhaps we wouldn't fall prey to these Jewish pogroms like feminism and MGTOW, which are out there to basically, well, destroy us in one way or another. They are different forms of Abrahamic ideology, Talmudic ideology. So the name of this broadcast is going to be Blood and Milk. And those are two things that only the female sex basically produces. Of course, we all have blood within our system, but by blood, I'm referring to the menstrual cycle, and by milk, I'm referring to lactation. So I've wanted to do this broadcast for a while, just talking about women's issues and things like that. And I think it's important to do a little kind of a off-the-beaten-path broadcast like this, especially since I've been spending a lot of time covering all the racial stuff going on, which is hugely important, very important. But sometimes nice to switch gears and talk about different stuff, which is also very important, all falling under the header of white wellness. And speaking of blood and also of the green-eyed lady or green eye color, oftentimes people who have A negative blood tend to have green eyes or at least hazel eyes and kind of a auburn red or golden undertone to their hair. And that kind of describes me. To an extent, I am A negative, mentioned it before on the broadcast. I have kind of a hazel eye, still falling into the green-eyed category, I would say. And oftentimes people who have O blood, or at least are from that lineage, tend to have blue eyes and blonde hair. Not to say that every person with O negative blood is going to have blonde hair and blue eyes, and not to say every person with A negative blood is going to have red hair and green eyes, but they might have nuances, or at least some type of remnant of those traits, those real diverse traits, not diversity, but real diversity. And we are the true people of color. Really very agitated by that BIPOC acronym. Really sucks hard. And speaking of milk, I just had a little bit of kefir myself. I got some good sheep kefir from the farm this week, treated myself to that. I don't do the sheep dairy too much because it's, well, a bit costly compared to the cow or the goat dairy. But I was fixing for a little treat. And for me, treats usually come in the form of high-quality food, not the kind of person that's going to treat myself or treat yourself, as some people say, not me particularly, but I'm not the kind of person that's going to treat myself by procuring a designer handbag. I'd rather treat myself by buying some really good, nutrient-dense food. So I got myself this sheep kefir, and sheep milk, if you haven't had it before in your life, it tastes very much like cow milk. Goat milk, a little gamey, depending on, of course, what the goats eat. I love it. I'm really very much drawn to goat milk and lamb meat. Maybe get some of my ancestry being Sicilian. I don't know. I just like it. But sheep milk has very much of a profile, a palatable profile or a tasting profile that's very similar to cow milk. And it's very rich in vitamin C. Oftentimes when we think of vitamin C, we think, well, citrus, things of that nature. Also things like bell peppers and cabbage to an extent. Of course, sauerkraut. When cabbage becomes sauerkraut, the vitamin C increases, which is really groovy. That's kind of like a biological type of change that happens, a physical change that happens, which is really cool. But there are vitamin C sources in animal foods, one of them being sheep's milk, and another one being spleen, the spleen of an animal, because you always want to think, how could these traditional cultures who were very much animal-based wouldn't have had the availability nor the climate like the Arctic to even have something like citrus fruits? How did they not get scurvy? Well, it was from things like milk, possibly sheep milk, and probably more possibly things like spleen. So I just had myself some sheep kefir. I made this really groovy kind of a creamsicle type of thing with some sheep kefir, the juice of one organic orange, two egg yolks, and a little bit of vanilla bean. If you didn't have vanilla bean powder, you could use the vanilla extract. I used the vanilla bean. And it was a delicious type of a tart creamsicle, totally raw. The dairy was raw, the eggs were raw, the vanilla bean powder was raw, and the orange was raw. And very refreshing, very hydrating. Oftentimes when people are dehydrated, they're really delipidated, which is a word that you're probably not going to hear too many places. Delipidated is lack of fats. And by fats, I mean animal fats. I'm not referring to, you know, oils and things like that, which certain oils, like the fruit oils, those are okay to include in the diet, preferably raw and preferably not in huge quantity. But that's what I had right now. And after the broadcast, I'll probably fix myself another little munch, but that's what I had right now. Feeling good, feeling naturally high, actually, which is a thing, contrary to what the Zio media tells you that you need to do this, this, and this to get high. You can be naturally high when you eat your natural diet, purge the toxicity from your system, get adequate sun, and quell or trim the habits that will dull your natural high, your natural ecstasy. We all have this inside of us, no matter who we are, male or female, regardless of our race or age or any of that stuff. We all have the magic within us. It's just a matter of tapping in to that magic. So speaking of magic, I wanted to talk a little bit about the magical power of menstruation. And this is not feminist stuff at all. Of course, it could be kind of, well, woven that way to be feminist stuff, but this is real stuff. This is real sacred femininity. And of course, or actually divine femininity, shall I say. There's a divine feminine and the sacred masculine, and you can't have one without the other. So I want to start off this broadcast about blood and milk by going through the magical power of menstruation. And it definitely is a magical power. I know in some of these vegan circles, they are deluded into believing that they can eat a certain way so they'll actually stop their cycle and they won't be getting it anymore and that they're actually cleaner and superior. But that belief is just, well, an Abrahamic Talmudic mental illness. So let's start out with this article for the broadcast, The Magical Power of Menstruation. And this article is written by a tantric priestess, a Shakti circle holder, and a spiritual guide, as well as an Ayurvedic wellness coach. This is a white lady. Her name is Yogini Gopika, or at least that's the kind of more Sanskrit name that she's using. And this broadcast, even though I'm talking right now about menstruation, this broadcast is going to be for all ladies, whether you're a maiden, a mother, or a crone, if you're in those phases of your life, no matter what phase of your life that you're in, this is for you. Granted, this information about menstruation is, of course, more geared towards people in the maiden or the mother phase of their life, but nevertheless, important information. So without further ado, the magical power of menstruation. So here is a bit about this. Dear sisters, today as I rest in my home temple in the silence of myself, and that word temple doesn't necessarily have to be connoted with Judaism, it can be taken back like many things, I realize how fortunate we are as women to even have our monthly cycle. And the monthly cycle is somewhat of a purge. Men don't get the same chance to have this purge. Every red moon is an invitation for us to get quiet and process the month we have just lived. Not only is it a time to cleanse and release, it's also our chance to just be and deeply nourish our feminine spirit. All important stuff that the kind of the modern society really doesn't take the pause to really, well, note. As our hormones settle and our blood begins to flow, we are able to be in that space that is free from doing. This gives us huge opportunity for magic. Getting honest with ourselves as we slow down allows us to clear out the old and realign with our core being. It is a gift. Let us embrace it with love. All we need to do is sit down or even lie down. Soften into the space around us as we spiral inward. Turn off the distractions, like the computer and your mobile phone, and remove yourself from the company of others. This is the time, if there ever was one, to say no, in caps. It is our natural time to retreat from the world without apologies. Let go of the guilt and give yourself this sacred time. And maybe you notice when it's this time of the month for you, maybe you feel less social. Maybe perhaps you feel bad about feeling antisocial. You shouldn't. This is a time to kind of reassess and retract and be with yourself. It's completely and totally normal. And the way things are going now with the whole workforce, maybe a bit different with Oyid AI and all that type of stuff, it's forced women to never really take this natural pause, which is totally unnatural. It's really a shame. I do think, and maybe people will think that this is a sexist thing to say, I don't care. I'm fine with being called any of these labels at this point. Call me whatever you want. Doesn't matter to me. But I think that a woman's system, her biology, is best suited to not having a full-time job, not having a high-powered career. Of course, depending on who you are and what your circumstances in your life are, that may not be something that you could feasibly do right now. But from a biological perspective, I think that a woman's constitution is best suited to part-time work or more in-the-house work. And a man's constitution is better suited to more full-time or outside-the-house work. So like I said, if you want to call me sexist or whatever, do it. I don't care. I'm just talking about biology, and biology is facts. All we need to do, oh, I read that part already, okay. As we get quiet, our intuitive voice can be heard. She speaks in whispers that are ever so valuable. Wisdom arises from the depths as long as we do our part and allow the unfolding to happen. So let the body rest from daily demands as it is going through its own process. It is a time to skip the workout, stop tidying the house, and cozy up in your favorite nest. As the energy is moving downward, it is also not a time for mental work, so put that logical brain to rest. As we drop down and in, as we give ourselves permission to really get quiet, what do we find? Our enhanced intuition that will guide us in how to process the cycle we are leaving behind and hold us as we rest in the space in between. If we do this, we will be ready to be birthed anew and begin again. So there's very much a Satanama, a birth, life, death, rebirth feel or flavor to the menstrual cycle, very much so. During this sacred time, there is possibility for deep nurturing, healing, and developing new levels of wisdom. We must make it our intention to honor the process. That is all we need to do. Make the space with reverence for ourselves and for nature's beautiful expression. That is the beauty. We don't need to do anything. All will unfold like a flower blossoming as the feminine softens and lets go. And another thing that we really don't have too much in this modern society, this Zog society, is kind of a reverence for real femininity. We see kind of, well, maybe inverted forms of femininity, a lot of them very aggressive, very kind of almost inverted in like a kind of like a trans way. And this isn't real femininity. And oftentimes there's not a lot of good role models out there for ladies, especially young ladies. So it's really important that true, authentic femininity is embraced wherever we can find it. And there are avenues and alcoves, possibly people who aren't as visible as, let's say, the people who are prominent in the Zio media. But remember that a lot of what they show you out there that they're telling you is feminine or female, well, they might be trannies, number one. And number two is that they're selling something that's not really divinely feminine. It's some type of inversion that's, well, I think going to lead to spiritual sickness. Surely if you make this part of your life, softening and becoming more feminine, blossoming like a flower, all that stuff, as a sacred ritual of self-care and an expression of self-love, then your red moon time will become your favorite time of month as it is mine. Try it for yourself. And also this society kind of, the relationship they have, or the relationship that they show, this Zog-society, with the menstrual cycle, it's always like, ew, right? It's usually that. Or you see some deranged feminist who's running a 5K with no maxi pad on, and she's liberated by blood drizzling down her leg. So one way or another, they're making it either disgusting or kind of like fearful, I guess you'd say. The author of this goes on to say, I used to have very painful periods, and that has totally disappeared. I personally can very much relate to that. I too used to have a very painful period, so bad that when I was in the public fooling system as a youngster, I routinely would find myself in the nurse's office because the pain was so bad, and then I'd have to phone my mom and she'd have to pick me up. Years later, I realized that the super healthy, high-fiber, low-fat diet that I was eating was one of the contributors to that painful period. There were other things as well, but this was one of the main contributors, because when you're eating that diet, it's very hard to fully empty your bowels. And then when the time of the month comes around, what happens? All that poop that's stuck in your body, the colon and the intestine is pushing down weight on your uterus, and that's one of the reasons that people get cramps. The author goes on to say, no more stabbing pain and reaching for painkillers. And I can relate to that too. I had a habit of taking Advil. I quit that habit about 4 years ago, but I would routinely take sometimes six Advil a day for the first 2-3 days of my cycle because the pain was just excruciating. No more dreading my next one. Now I rejoice in being a woman as I allow myself to truly be which I am. The secret is that this time of the month is powerfully transformative if given its due attention. The patriarchal society in which we grew up has encouraged, or brainwashed, women to push on as if their periods don't exist. And of course, patriarchal is just a Jew age expression for the Jewish society, the Zio society, the Talmudic society. Just plug it up with a synthetic chemically bleached tampon, or what I like to call a tampoon, and take some pills and keep up the status quo. What a tragedy, to say the least, not only for women, but for men as well. This is the opportune time for men to step up and be the caretaker and show the qualities of noble masculinity. Of course, a lot of masculinity nowadays is being viewed as toxic, but that's just a psychological pogrom to get men to turn into, well, queers or women. It is also the time that women can receive profound realizations to help redirect their family and even society as a whole in the right direction. In ancient cultures, women were consulted on all tribal matters during their red moon period. As the veil between the world is lifted, channels of perception naturally open to reveal deeper truths. This is a time for ladies, if you are a menstruating lady, that you actually kind of have more of your power. No wonder the Zog Talmudic Society has kind of made periods and menstruation into this gross thing. They don't want us to harness our sacred power. That which has not been understood and cannot be controlled has been ostracized out of fear. And of course, this goes back to the Zio agendas. So instead of celebrating the natural process and its gifts, women have been shunned in some cultures and in others been taught to reject and even eradicate their natural cycles altogether. Most of those cultures or religions or races have to do with, Talmudicism. I can just imagine, I don't know too much about the Muzzy relationship or the Pislam relationship to a menstrual cycle, but I'm sure it's thought to be, well, something that women are made to feel bad for. And in Judaism, especially in Orthodox Judaism, you're not even allowed to sleep in the same bed as your spouse for 2 weeks, not just, the 4, 5, or 6 days that you're having your cycle. For 2 weeks, you're not allowed to sleep in the same bed as your spouse. Obviously, no sex. You can't even touch your spouse, which is, psychopathic, but what else can we expect? All is not what it seems. Inconvenience can turn into a blessing. The magic of alchemy is transforming pain into pleasure. Death becomes life as the wheel turns, Satanama. We are part of nature's wheel, the moon's ebb and flow, deeply connected to this cycle of life. The feminine experience is meant to correspond with Mother Nature, to be part of her rhythms. The divine feminine is rising. Taking back our menstrual cycles as sacred is a crucial step to this unfolding. I invite you now in this moment to take a vow with me for your next coming red moon. Let us commit to taking the time to just be with ourselves in the silence of our soul. And here is a red moon manifesto. And perhaps these can kind of be seen as some tips that maybe you'll think about, or maybe you'll apply these tips next time you have your cycle. Honor our bodies and the natural ebb and flow as we are one with the moon. Take a vow of silence for at least one day, or at least a few hours, as we sink into the warm darkness of the self. Connect with our like-minded sisters for nourishment and support. Allow our mind, bodies, and souls to deeply rest. Turn off all electronics. It is so liberating. You can do it. Treat ourselves with radical self-love. Your needs come first. Feel held and protected by the universal energies of the sky and earth, as we are a child of Mother Nature. Use only products that are healthy for our bodies, like washable cotton pads and moon cups. And if you were going to use the disposable stuff, I would always recommend getting organic tampons and organic maxi pads. I like the brand NatraCare, NatraCare. Depending on where you live, that might be available or not. They are one of the older brands in the, I guess, the menstrual, feminine product game. There are a lot of new brands that are out now, but that's my favorite. But of course, having a cup and a washable pad would be the most sustainable option. But it's nice to have a variety. Personally, I keep a variety of these products in stock just so I can have a little bit of everything. Sometimes someone might not actually want to have the cup inside, so just having a pad is an idea as well. When you do have the cup in though, and you remove it, and you basically take, delete the blood or get rid of the blood and then re-put it into your body, you can kind of get more of a feel of what your blood actually looks like. So it's a good indicator, especially if you're having some irregularities with your cycle and you're wanting to kind of inspect your blood. Offer our sacred blood back to the earth as it is healing life liquid. And yes, maybe that sounds a bit weird to some people, but you can just pour it out in the ground, put it in the garden. People oftentimes will use it as a fertilizer. If you're eating a clean diet, I don't really think that that's nasty, because when you think about it, oftentimes people will buy fertilizing agents when they're doing organic, regenerative, permaculture types of, real farming, not Zog farming. And they will actually buy stuff that has blood meal in it. So why not create your own blood meal, essentially? Feed ourselves healthy, easily digestible foods. I've mentioned before in other broadcasts in the past, but I'll mention it here. For me, the type of stuff that I like to always make sure I have some type of red meat, which I eat in general, even if it's not my cycle. But that time of the month, I very much crave like juicy red meat, something like a steak or a burger. Usually a steak is my preference, so I always make sure I have a steak at this time of the month. Also things like a bone broth, like I love a chicken broth. Just sometimes I'll just make it really simply where I'll season the broth with a little bit of salt, umeboshi vinegar, coconut aminos, and I'll scramble in some eggs, kind of like an egg rag soup, what the Chinese would call an egg drop soup. No cornstarch for me though. What the Greeks would call, what's that word? Algomovado. I'm saying it incorrectly. Let me get my pronunciation right on this. This is a Greek lemon soup. It's an egg drop soup. Oftentimes it has little wee bits of orzo. Avgolemono, that is the Greek soup. So every culture kind of has an egg rag soup, for lack of a better word. That's something I also like to have. Sometimes I'll add some scallions, chives, and cilantro on top. Oftentimes I add a little bit of a white rice in there too if I'm fixing for that. Let our friends and family know that we are not to be disturbed. They will survive. That's good too. It's always good to work on one's boundaries. Some of us didn't grow up with boundaries. Some of our parents didn't grow up with boundaries. So you got to learn it some way or another. Give ourselves at least one day totally interrupted. More if possible, space will be open. And have faith that times are changing and we are part of a collective rising of divine feminine sisterhood. Well, I would add that there should be a rising of sacred masculine brotherhood, because we really need both. We can't have just one. And there may be a little bit of a feminist undertone in this. I don't know the views of the author, but oftentimes stuff like this does tend to have a little bit of this feminist undertone. Not to say that every tenet of feminism is bad. There's plenty of good tenets within these toxic ideologies. That's how they're able to hook people, right? But still, I always like to give the balance out there to the divine feminine and the sacred masculine, because they are both important. So that was that first article, The Magical Power of Menstruation. Hopefully that was good for you, whether you're male or female. It's good stuff. We should all be familiar with this and understand this is just one other avenue that, well, the Zio media that the Talmudic system has co-opted and tried to make into just something. They try to defile the sacred and make it disgusting. They do that with many things, but this is just one example of doing such. Okay, time for the next article for this broadcast. And here's a little bit about your guide to less painful periods. So this is some good information for everybody out there. Maybe you're suffering with a painful period. So I have some advice right now about how to kind of ease those pains. And I had mentioned before about eating a better diet. Like if you're eating lots of these fibers and stuff and these things that are really hard to digest, and some people can digest it better than others, that still doesn't mean that it's part of our natural human diet, right? Of course, some of us who can digest it better are those of us who maybe haven't eaten this stuff growing up. Maybe we were fed more of a sad diet, albeit a diet that had, at the end of the day, more nutrients. So we're able to kind of, I don't know, go more time. We have more of a reserve or a reservoir. That's why some people, when they go on the vegetableist or the vegan regime, they hit the wall at 5 years because they have a good reserve. Some hit the wall at 6 months or a year because their reserve isn't so good. So here is this article about pain-free periods. It's a fact that, here's a fact that has a high chance of making you hiss. Not every woman experiences painful periods. Well, that's true. Some do and some don't. So this article is focusing on lifestyle, diet, and specific supplements, and I'll kind of weed my way through the supplements because I don't like a lot of this supplement stuff. The shame with this is that a lot of the information out there, perhaps the people who are giving the information aren't even aware that they're really just doling out allopathic advice. And I think that there was a time with me that I was guilty of this too, that I was doling out allopathic advice, not realizing that I was doling out allopathic advice. So I really make sure when I go over all of the topics for the broadcast, whether it's something like this or something else, I always want to make sure that I'm really not doling out allopathic advice because, well, that would be an inversion. So I really like to focus on two things when I'm, you know, doing these shows, these white wellness shows. One is not to be doling out allopathic wisdom, to focus on holistic wisdom, real holistic wisdom, and to share and promote these ideas in a racial perspective. And I think that's one of the things that makes this show stand out, is the fact that it really is radically holistic and it's also radically racial. And I hope that the listeners appreciate that. So here's a little guide about curbing period pain. So some people are just going to have, you know, more or less. It depends. I mean, it's not just your diet. It could be, well, some emotional things you haven't addressed in your life. It could be a lot of things. So here's a little bit about painful periods. Abdominal cramps, low back pain, pain in the inner thighs, headaches, and fatigue. Up to 90% of women experience these symptoms during their cycle, with up to one quarter having symptoms severe enough to miss work. And that kind of goes back to what I just said about the female constitution really being biologically better designed to be doing part-time work or work inside the home. And of course, we're now following a modern diet and a modern lifestyle, which probably exacerbates this so much more. The medical term for painful periods is dysmenorrhea. And there are two types, primary and secondary. Primary dysmenorrhea is due to the production of inflammatory compounds called prostaglandins in your uterus. It often starts in your teens and lessens with age. And I've heard that women who have this type, oftentimes after they have a child, they will also have less menstrual period pains and cramps. Secondary dysmenorrhea is a result of an underlying condition that causes menstrual pain, such as endometriosis, which is a thickening of the inside lining of the uterus, or uterine fibroids. It often starts later in life and doesn't get better with age. They're also saying period pain lessens after having a baby, even if it's delivered by C-section. That's because it's the act of birthing. It's not necessarily C-section or not, although that would be a totally different show. C-section is rampant, especially in Texas. I think that's a state here in America where they really do a lot of C-sections there, but that'll be for another broadcast, if anything. Why are periods painful? just before the start of your menstrual flow, the blood supply and oxygen delivery to your uterus is reduced. To shed its lining, the uterus produces those inflammatory prostaglandins, which cause contractions. This combination of low oxygen, prostaglandins, and contractions or cramps is what causes period pain. And that's part of the story. Of course, having good circulation and doing a lot of movement doesn't necessarily have to be hyper vigorous movement. It just has to be the right movement. Maybe all that hyper vigorous movement actually isn't what you need. Maybe you need more juicy or more feminine or more succulent types of exercise, like doing more belly dancing types of stuff or kundalini types of stuff. Oftentimes, again, in this Zog culture, women are told to do all of this hyper exercise, which is very young and very masculine and really doesn't suit our divine feminine essence. And of course, like I had mentioned prior, cramps can also happen from a high fiber diet because it's kind of hard to get all the poop out. Sometimes fiber will cause constipation in certain people. Other people, it will cause like more of an IBS or a diarrhea situation, but still you're bound to have that fiber, which slows digestion. And that's the fact. That's not just my opinion. Slowing digestion. So by the time your period rolls around, you have the weight of that feces, which is slowly moving out of you, putting weight on your uterus. It's worth pointing out, however, that women who experience period pain are more sensitive to pain in general, not just during their cycle. Women who have heavier periods are also more likely to have pain, and that's true, but it also can be not true too. It really depends what the culprit, what the reason why you're having the pain is. And here's a little sidebar on this article. To reduce period pain, avoid these things, and I agree with this: alcohol, caffeine, salty snacks, that would be like, you know, chips and Quackers and pretzels, all terribly hard to digest as well. And salt can oftentimes lead to bloating, PMS. Most of the salt in those products is shit salt as well. You also want to avoid cookies, cakes, and baked goods. Again, very hard to digest foods will take a long time to move out of the body. Skipped meals, that's not a good idea. Cigarettes and sedentary lifestyle. So that's all good tips. And here are some soothing strategies, things you can do to lessen period pain. Tweak your lifestyle. Studies have found that lifestyle factors contribute to painful periods. Women who are underweight or overweight are more likely to have painful periods, as are heavy smokers. They're saying eat more fruit and veg. Well, that could be debated because then you're going to have all that fiber in your intestines resting on your uterus and causing cramps. I think it really depends what fruits and vegetables. Like, for example, something like zucchini, I think, is a far better choice than loading up on something very fibrous like green beans or cruciferous vegetables. And zucchini tastes a lot better, too. Women who eat more fruit and veg have less menstrual pain, while those who consume more sugar and more salt and more caffeine have more pain. So you see right there, that's kind of, well, not really giving us the full idea of what we could cause menstrual pain, because they're just saying that women who eat more fruits and vegetables, and they're probably doing one of these correlation without causation types of cherry picks, that this is, the Zio Media is famous for this, especially in the allopathic realm, where they're associating people who eat meat, and this may or may not be true, with eating more sugar, salt, and caffeine. If they're following a SAD diet, yeah, they're probably more likely to eat that type of stuff. But are they looking at people who are following more of an animal-based ancestral diet? No, they're not. They're just probably cherry-picking data from people who are following a Zog SAD diet and a Zog vegan diet. So kind of like a dialectic that really sucks. They're saying cut back on the latter foods and bump up the produce intake. I would say cut back on the latter foods, but be conscious of eating stuff that is too fibrous, because that's not so good, not just for your period, but for your digestion and things like that. And also just think about how some of these vegetables and fruits are high in estrogen, and that's actually going to cause period pain. So you really have to decipher through and use your filter, or I'm using my filter right now, to go through a lot of this information. And of course, this just comes from one of these quasi or quasi healthy type of greenwashed or whitewashed publications. I guess greenwashed is a better word. Whitewashed even sounds a bit derogatory, especially in light of all the derogatory words that are out there, like the Karen Act and Karen. I don't want to be part of any of that. But yeah, just think about that, and just think about honing your filter more, because most of the articles that are in magazines like this, There's going to be some kernels of truth, but there's also going to be some zoggery. Another tip, reduce stress. Women who report more work or life stress experience more painful periods. Well, that makes sense. Reduce stress by staying active, both physically and socially, and taking control of your busy schedule by learning to prioritize. Exercising regularly. This can reduce pain by improving blood flow to the uterus and alerting production of pain-promoting prostaglandins in the uterus. Regular exercise is best, but exercising just before and during your period can also help, especially if you have a sedentary job. And that prior article that I had orated said to skip the workout. But you might want to just do something more gentle. No harm in doing something more gentle. That's okay. Maybe it's a gentle walk. Maybe it's some Kundalini yoga. Maybe it's just something that's more gentle and more feminine. Maybe if you want to do more of a vigorous type of exercise, like maybe some HIIT, some high intensity interval training, perhaps you do that during the week after your period where you should typically have the most amount of energy. And men are on a cycle too. Of course, we're all on a cycle. Even the gals that have gone past the change and are in the crone phase of their life, they're in a cycle too. Just when one has a menstrual cycle and one's a woman of that age that gets a menstrual cycle, our cycle, our rhythm is more obvious because we have that pause with the period. The next tip, know your nutrients. Nutrient deficiencies have been found to increase period pain for women. Focusing on a few key nutrients can help you be a lot more comfortable. And number one is vitamin B1. Alone or with omega-3s, vitamin B1 can reduce cramps and mood changes during your period. Of course, great source of B1. Wouldn't be taking some Zog supplement. It would be eating some grass-fed red meat. Vitamin D. Approximately 40% of Americans are vitamin D deficient, according to a recent estimate. That's a pretty high number right there. Supplementing may diminish period pain in women who are deficient. And of course, if you live in an area where you get less sun, it's going to be harder to get vitamin D. Two good sources of vitamin D are oily fish and pasture-raised lard from pasture-raised pigs. That would be a good source right there. Also, fish eggs, egg yolks, and butter are good sources. Vitamin E, often combined with fish oils, and I wouldn't suggest anyone taking a fish oil capsule. I would suggest getting the fish oils from eating fish fat, which is a whole food. A fish oil is not a whole food. So if you're eating, like, let's say you're eating like the salmon head, like the head of the salmon, right? Wouldn't you be better just getting the fat from that? And there's a lot of fat on a salmon head, and you can get this very cheaply too. It's kind of considered like a peasant cut or a hobo cut. There's a lot of fat behind the eyes on a salmon head, so you're better off getting fish fat. Vitamin E may also be as effective as pain medications for dampening period pain. Great news. Other sources of vitamin E would be butter, fish, goose, and roe. That would be fish roe or caviar. Magnesium, and I've talked about this before in the broadcast, very important stuff. Magnesium deficiency is thought to contribute to painful periods. In fact, magnesium may be the most impactful nutrient for period pain. It can help relax the uterus, enhance your ability to cope with stress, reduce premenstrual symptoms, PMS, especially when combined with vitamin B6 to both prevent and treat painful periods. And magnesium is something that is in food, of course, especially if you just eat a wide variety of animal-based foods. But it is also something that you can spray on your skin. If you do this after you shave your legs, it will sting a little bit. So on the days that I shave, I tend to skip it, or I'll put it on later on during the day. And you can just find all types of magnesium sprays all over the internet. You can get yourself one, but I typically like to spray it on my legs, front and back of my legs, after I have a shower. You could also get yourself some magnesium flakes, and you can use that for a foot soak, or you could use it for a hand soak. So regardless of whether you're spraying it or soaking it, you're getting it into your system transdermally. And this is good if you don't have your period, if you're not having your period currently, or if you're a lady that's gone past the change, or if you're a guy, this is still solid advice. And one of the reasons that women tend to crave chocolate around the time of their period is because chocolate is high in magnesium. But chocolate isn't necessarily the best choice because it is a bit of a stimulant food. It does have caffeine in it, and there's some other things like oxalic acid and such. I'm not trying to shit talk chocolate 100%. I still enjoy a little bit of it from time to time, but there was a time in my life when I just had an insatiable urge, an absolute craving, where I would have to have it seriously, like every single day. Now, once in a while, I have a little square of chocolate. There's this brand that I found recently, not remembering the brand name right now, but it's actually a chocolate that is sweetened with maple sugar, which is very nice to see because most of the chocolate on the market is either cane sugar or coconut sugar. I loathe coconut sugar. I would sooner eat something that had cane sugar in it because I just hate the way coconut sugar tastes. But maple sugar, of course, is your best bet. So that's typically what I'll have. I'll have this chocolate, or I'll have, this brand is probably familiar to certain people. It also happens to be vegan. Not that that really matters to me. Actually, it certainly doesn't matter to me. But there's a brand of tarts, like these little raw vegan tarts that are made with coconut oil and chocolate. Some of them actually have natural flavors, like the Meyer lemon one. They started adding that at some point, which is a real bummer because I totally love Meyer lemon. But anyway, sometimes I'll get their chocolate tart, which is just like a little bit of, chocolate, and it's pretty high quality ingredients. It's maple syrup. They also have a couple of products that use agave nectar. I would definitely avoid agave nectar. It's real bad for your blood sugar, and agave or all aloe plants, agave being an aloe plant, they are defined in herbalism as an abortificant. So this is something that you would definitely want to avoid, especially if you were trying to conceive. But yeah, chocolate in moderation, a little bit for me here and there is good. But if you have an insatiable craving for it, there's more than likely a good chance that you are magnesium deficient. And a bit about B6, because this article just mentioned that magnesium works hand in hand with B6. B6 can be gotten from meat, dairy, eggs, liver, and bananas. Of course, less bioavailable from bananas. Bananas are also very high in carbohydrate. I'm not a big banana fan, personally. Sometimes I like them. Recently, I made a raw banana pie. It was raw carnivore. It wasn't raw vegan. It was mostly carnivorous, albeit fruit is not carnivorous. But a lot of people who do more of an animal-based or an ancestral-based diet will include a bit of fruit. Of course, everyone's different. You do what works for you. But the best sources of vitamin B6 are always going to be animal foods, and especially raw dairy and raw meat, and especially raw meat, because when you cook meat, much of the B6 is totally cooked out. So if you really want to make sure that you're getting enough B6 in your diet, whether you're a menstruating woman, a lady that's gone through the change, a crone, or a man, you want to make sure that you're getting enough B6, and the way to do that is to add a little bit of raw meat to your diet. Start with something simple like a carpaccio, which is very, very thinly sliced beef. Start with something like that, or start with a tartare. Very simple, very easy, and you will be surprised just how delicious it is. And there's no pill in the world that will ever replace real animal food, ever. There just isn't. I mean, Zog can spend $6 million trying to make this facsimile of B6. Nature cannot be improved upon. Okay, back to the tips for this article. Choose soothing botanicals. And here's a bit about herbs. I'm not the biggest fan of herbs. I kind of see them as a bit more of a band-aid effect, but I will go through this because herbs in small amounts, depending, they can be somewhat beneficial. But always remember that pharmaceuticals are made from herbs. Aspirin is made from white willow bark. So there are certain instances where they can be beneficial, especially if someone's looking to do some type of detox and weed offensive things out of their system. So I will read a little bit about the herbs. One of those is ginger. Ginger is known to reduce prostaglandin production. Ginger is good for easing period pain. Take for 5 days, beginning just before your period. It has been shown to be effective and have minimal side effects. Other spicy options, they're saying cinnamon is as effective as ibuprofen. And fenugreek is typically taken as a supplement, but using these spices in food and tea could possibly reduce period pain. So look, they're telling you right there, it's as effective as ibuprofen. I would be a little on the side of caution with the fenugreek, because that can influence hormones. So like I said, herbs are medicine, right? If you're eating an animal-based diet, you'll come to the realization through your own empirical evidence that you don't need to use a lot of these herbs and spices. Maybe you want to use a little bit of spicing in your food, and that's totally groovy, but you don't want to be using loads of herbs to just eat them like a Band-Aid effect, like, oh, this hurts me, I'll take this. I stub my toe, I'll take this. I have a itch, I'll take this. Like, that's really not the best modality to go by. Another one they suggest is valerian, which is mostly used for sleep, but also can soothe period pain. This stuff smells horrific. I had a box of valerian tea at one point, and I threw it out because it just smelled it was just disgusting. I don't even know how to describe it, like partially sweat sock, partially something else, just vile. And another herb they recommend is chasteberry, what's known as Vitex. This herb sometimes can be prescribed for relieving PMS. So, like I said, mentioning this right here, but these are really just Band-Aid effects. If you really want to kind of get to the root or the radix, you really want to work with fixing your diet and deleting any of the toxic load that is still within the confines of your system. And we all have toxicity load. Even if we didn't do a lot of drugs or alcohol in our lives, we still have events that were toxic and traumatizing. We're living here with the Zog fog, the soil being depleted, vaccination, just eating foods. Even if you ate a good diet most of your life, well, it still wasn't as good as you probably thought it was. So there's always reasons why we should all engage in some type of, you know, deletion of toxins. You don't have to go hardcore and do a lot of these detox therapies that are very dangerous. I'm not suggesting that anybody drink turpentine or hydrogen peroxide. I know there are people who are promoting that and doing that, but really the best way to cleanse your system is to start eating the natural human diet, and that would be animal foods, especially raw animal foods. As radical as it sounds, that's the solution. That's the thing, is that all these things that the media says, ooh, that's so radical, that's so radical. Well, it's just natural. Anytime you hear the word radical in the media, just replace it with the word natural. Very simple. Okay. That was that article right there about lessening painful periods. Hopefully that was good for you. Let me just take a little sip of liquid and move on to some other material that I've put together for this broadcast. Whenever I find a clipping, I just put it in my White Wellness folder and I use it for the show. Okay, what else do I have to talk about today? Let's see. All right, now it's time to go to my other file, because that was just my physical clippings. Now I'm going to my email, and let's see what I have to say right here. Okay, so now we've talked a little bit about blood, right? And now we're gonna talk, and that was periods and vaginas and all that good stuff. And now we're gonna talk about milk or breasts, and we're gonna talk a little bit about breast health. Something that isn't touched upon too much, but very, very important information. And I want to talk a little bit about bras and how bras are really just, well, another psychological operation. Really not a good thing to be wearing a bra with underwire. Not good for your breast to have that underwire underneath your breast. Not only is it uncomfortable, but you're suppressing your lymph nodes when you wear that. Like, you have something that's kind of cupping your breasts, and maybe it pushes them up, and you think, or if you've been told or taught to think, that it looks good. But over time, what you're doing is you're just like pushing up under your breasts and you're blocking the lymph. I think there's been connections with women who wear bras and developing breast cancer, because there's a lot of lymph around that area. There's lymph around the breasts, in the breasts, under the underarm. So you really want to make sure that you wear a bra that doesn't have an underwire, or also think about going braless. Maybe if you're going outside the house, it's not a feasible option. But oftentimes you can wear something where you can kind of conceal your nipples, so it can be a feasible option. I mean, wearing a bra is really just, when you think about it, it's really very much recent thing. Our people and other people around the world didn't really wear bras historically. If you look at a lot of what the Zio Media calls a primitive culture, and I'm not using that word to deride these people or make them feel like they're inferior. Everyone is who they are, but they'll use that word oftentimes when they're pointing out, like, let's say some people who live really close to the bone, people who, you know, are nomadic people who live off the land. Like, think about some of the tribes in Africa. Think about some of the tribes in the Amazon. They are not wearing bras, right? And their breasts look pretty good. I've seen many pictures of them. They don't have sag. That's another thing. They lie to us and tell us that your boobs are going to sag if you don't wear a bra. That's not true. Your breasts are more likely to sag if you do wear a bra. There's actually no evidence that going without a bra can make your breasts sag earlier, and there's no evidence that wearing a bra keeps them from sagging. Several recent studies have found that going braless may actually help your breasts become perkier. And when you think about this, it's not a bra that's going to keep your breasts perkier. It's working out the pectoral muscle that's going to keep your breasts perky. So if you're doing, you know, some type of thing with like your free weights or whatever you're doing, like if you're working out at home, and I hope you are, you can do some chest exercises, like some chest presses and some chest flies that will keep your breasts nice and perky. And a lot of yoga moves are really good for keeping your breasts looking very good. And you should wear a sports bra when you're exercising. Like, I wouldn't suggest exercising braless unless you're doing like nude yoga. And maybe every so often you like to do that. That's your own thing. Now's the time to do it. There are studios actually that do offer nude yoga, or they were in Manhattan. I just can't imagine wanting to ever go to an environment like that. I know they were offering some co-ed nude yoga, because one time I looked into it because I just thought it was hysterical and I had to figure out or investigate as to what it was. But it seems to be something that seems to be very prevalent in the homosexual community, like where they had just male nude yoga. I think it was kind of like a offline Tinder meets yoga, or Grindr, excuse me. But I think it was really just a homosexual hookup place. But they do have co-ed nude yoga, which I just can't imagine being in a class with people just bending over in front of me, that would be anything that I'd ever want to take. But if you're on your own and you're doing it alone, I mean, you can do any type of exercise without a bra on. But if you're doing something that's kind of more active, you know, you're definitely going to want to wear a sports bra, which doesn't have underwire on them. Oftentimes during the day, I'll just wear a sports bra regardless, even if I'm not working out, because I just like the way it feels. And one of the companies that I will get sports bras from, I typically wait until they're on sale. I like Beyond Yoga. I usually get their yoga pants as well. And like I said, I wait for a sale because their stuff is a little bit costly, but it's very high quality. So I'd rather spend a little bit more on something that I'm going to have for years to come than to spend $20 on something that's going to go to shit in like a year. And they actually did support BLM in the beginning, which makes me feel somewhat like an asshole or a hypocrite, but they haven't been routinely promoting BLM, and I can't find anything that I think is 100% better. But I have scaled back on, well, shopping at many, many places that were supporting that. So just being honest about the fact that they did support BLM in the beginning and they are selling face masks. But nevertheless, I find that for me, I like their bras and leggings. Just want to be totally transparent with that information right there. Wearing a bra is analogous to having a cast on your arm. The muscles and ligaments will atrophy over time and be very weak, resulting in pain and discomfort when resuming normal activity. Actually, humans have only been wearing bras for the last 100 years or so. And here's a link about this. Let's see, right here. And there's a book. I'm going to mention this book right now. I have not read this book yet, but I have heard about it. It's called Dress to Kill: The Link Between Breast Cancer and Bras. And you can procure this book on Amazon or other places. But if you're interested more in this topic, I would suggest that book. Again, the book is called Dress to Kill: The Link Between Breast Cancer and Bras. And here's a description of this, this book, if anyone is interested in this. The authors have collected striking evidence that bra wearing may be a major cause of breast cancer. Women who wear tight-fitting bras 24 hours a day are 125 times more likely to have breast cancer than women who do not wear bras at all. Their interpretation is that tight clothing inhibits proper functioning of the lymphatic system, an internal network of vessels and nodes that flush wastes from the body, and leads to a buildup of carcinogenic compounds in the constricted areas. Although their studies are preliminary, still controversial, and definitely need to be followed up with more research, this book should be read by anyone concerned about breast cancer. Possibly a very important book that can save many lives. And even if, like they say, this is preliminary, controversial, and needs more research, I think if you have common sense, you could say, huh, tight-fitting bras, underwire, less than 100 years old. I think I'll go braless, or I think I will wear a bra without underwire. So if you use your common sense, you don't need to view and research all of these studies. That's oftentimes what happens with these people in the vegetableist movement. They want to read study after study after study. How about just using your common sense, understanding that the human has a digestive tract that's more analogous to a wolf than a ruminant or a primate, and that is enough right there. Case closed, right? Simple. And the thing over here when they're talking about cancer, and I went over a little bit about cancer, what the allopathic medical system calls cancer. And when you have breast cancer, oftentimes when you go in for the surgery aspect of that, the treatment, parentheses for treatment, they will amputate your lymph glands, which is very, very wrong because, as I just read here, the lymph is a network of vessels and nodes that flush waste from the body. So what they do is they poison you with chemotherapy and radiation, and then with the surgery, oftentimes that trio is called cut, burn, poison, that Talmudic allopathic cocktail. What they do is they basically are removing the aspect of your body, the lymph system, that flushes out the debris. That would be like removing someone's anus if they had colon cancer. It doesn't really make any sense, but allopathic is psychopathic, it's gaslit, and it's designed to really harm people. That's the bottom line with allopathy. I abhor allopathy. I've known many people personally in my life who have done allopathic treatment, from parentheses, who have either become extraordinarily ill or have died. So I despise it with an absolute vengeance. And the allopathic system never talks about the lymph. They spend all their time talking about the blood, right? Blood sugar, blood glucose, blood pressure, right? All of these things. They don't talk about the lymph. And that just shows you that they hyper-focus and hone in on things that, well, are important to an extent, of course, but their testing and their Talmudic ideology about how to go about it is insane, but they never talk about the lymph system, which is very, very important. I'll possibly even do a broadcast in the future where I'm going to talk about lymph, and I also want to talk about lymphatic cleansing and cleaning and how we can clean our lymph systems. So a little bit more about this book, Dressed to Kill. Forget what I just said about a little bit more. This is something else I want to read. Okay, so the Ayurvedic version of dis-ease, this has to do with the book. Okay, I'll retract that. I just didn't go over this one piece of the note before the broadcast. Okay, so their description of this book fits in perfectly with the Ayurvedic version of dis-ease, whether it be cancer, arthritis, etc. Wearing tight-fitting clothes is the kiss of death. Traditional clothing of India and various countries in the area are the best way to dress. Loose, draped, light coverings with no pressure points. And think about the way like Indian women, Dravidian women I'm talking about now, not Aryan or white, you know, the original populace of India. Look what they wear. They wear those things called saris, I think, right? Very breezy style of clothing. A bit amorphous in certain aspects, but nevertheless very breezy. And of course that helps when you're in a hot climate too. Women wearing high heels or men in cowboy boots need their heads examined. The anatomy is designed to be lined up properly. A string suspended from the ceiling should pass by your ear canal, the center of your shoulder, the center of your hips, the center of rotation of your knees, and the center of rotation of your ankles. Anything else, and you are causing muscles to be endlessly pulling and thus tiring you out and eventually causing pain and joint misalignment. And what do they promote to men and women? Well, women originally, but men as well. Now they promote skinny jeans, right? I mean, skinny jeans are, I don't know. I really haven't worn jeans, to be honest. I haven't worn jeans in like, I don't think I've worn jeans this year, actually, to tell you the truth. I used to be a bit of like a jeans person, and I do still wear leggings, and I'm trying to get away from those because those are still a bit snug, but I haven't worn jeans in a really long time, actually. It's gotta be, I don't know, November maybe? I don't know, but jeans are one of those things that, well, you really don't have to wear them if you don't want to. Sometimes they're nice, but I just haven't worn them, so yeah. And that's another thing, the joint pain and joint misalignment. They promote these styles to people that they tell us are, you know, sexy, but Are they really sexy or are they really harming us, right? You got to think about that. And this whole look of men wearing tight jeans, this has got to go. This is a really very unappetizing, unmasculine look. And the worst is when you see those hip hop people who are wearing the jeans that are very tight around the ankle and the thigh, and then it has like that loose, saggy butt region. That's a really vile look. Awful. Very aesthetically unpleasing. And speaking of that saggy butt look in the jeans or the dungarees, this is pretty disgusting. But supposedly that look of wearing the saggy pants started in the prison system. And that was a way for inmates to advertise their ass to other inmates for homosexual sex. So any man that's wearing their pants like that, in a way, you're kind of emulating something that criminal homosexuals would be doing. So not a good look at all. Not a good look at all. And it says over here a little bit more about posture. I was talking about joint misalignment and things like that. In the rush to sell calcium pills and et cetera to people that are told that osteoporosis is the reason that older women lean forward, that is nonsense. Posture is the problem. It just gets worse over time. And of course, a lot of chairs and furniture are designed to give people bad posture. A lot of food over time will give you really bad posture. A lot of exercise over time will give you really bad posture. Wearing a bra that's ill-fitting and too tight with underwire will give you bad posture. So I would suggest if you want to work on your posture, you work on your posture and you wear the right bra. You wear something that's soft, you know, with no underwire. If you can go a certain time of the day without the bra on, well, do that. Don't wear the bra. Why not? It's a nice freeing feeling. It was popular in the 60s. Why can't we make it popular again? And also for posture, think about doing yoga. That's a really good thing for posture. Pilates is also a good thing for posture. Bar, that type of stuff, which is kind of like a ballet Pilates hybrid, if I remember correctly. Also, think about your posture. When you're sitting some way, don't just slump over. When you're sitting in a chair, imagine that the chair has no back and have your posture go from there. Also, another good tip that I learned from a yoga teacher is when you're walking, imagine there's a balloon with a string that goes from your navel point all the way up to your head. And imagine that you have to keep that balloon string straight, but not straight like you're walking stiff or, you know, robotic, you know, in that type of way, like you're completely just in a rigor mortis state. Forget about that, or like trying to puff your chest out and look, you know, masculine or much macho. It's not about that. It's about having good posture, but not being like stiff or robotic. Another way to have good posture is to eat well. There are a lot of foods out there that rob us of our flexibility, especially sugar and especially baked grains. So think about eating foods that will, well, give you more fluidity in your body and make for better posture. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say about that product description and those bra tips, but I think very important right there. And also a bit more about this. These notes are a little bit of a kind of a hodgepodgey fashion, but nevertheless, solid information. I read a while ago there was a test that you can do called the pencil test for a bra. And supposedly if you could take a pencil and you could put it under your breast and it falls to the ground, that means that you can go without a bra. And if you take the pencil and it doesn't fall and it stays under your fold of your breast, that means that you're more likely to need a bra. So people who are more likely to kind of have it be harder for them to go without a bra are probably people who don't pass the pencil test, essentially. But you can still wear a soft bra with a soft underwire, and you could also work on doing some chest exercises to tone up your breast right there. And also something else I wanted to briefly mention. We're sold all of these potions to rub on our breasts to kind of make them bigger. Maybe you've seen in the back of these ladies' magazines, these potions that ladies are supposed to put on their breasts so they'll grow bigger. They're basically just like plant hormones. I wouldn't suggest using those things. And of course, we have things like breast augmentation. We also have things like fat transfer, where they take fat from like your booty or your thighs and they put that into your breast. That's what people are doing now, which does look way more natural than breast implants. Breast implants don't look that good. There's a lot of complications with breast implants too. They're expensive and they don't last forever. They tell you they last forever, but none of these plastic surgery procedures last forever. They just don't. So if you really want to increase your breast size, you should be eating the natural human diet. And if you want to increase your breast size without increasing the rest of your size, because of course, most people, they could eat just a load of shit, not even food, but shit, and they could get bigger breasts, but they also could get like a bigger belly and, you know, back bacon and muffin top and all this very unappetizing stuff. But you can increase the size of your breasts by eating a natural human diet. If you eat raw meat and you eat raw dairy, you'll naturally increase the size of your breasts. Your whole body will actually be looking more feminine or more masculine if you're a guy and you don't have breasts. So when you eat your natural diet, your natural shape kind of comes out more. And of course, everyone has a natural shape unto themselves. Regardless, there tends to be more of a variation with women's shapes. Men have more of similar shapes, even if they tend to be overweight. There's less of a variant with the male shape. But with women tend to have basically four shapes. There's the ruler, which is straight up and down, tends to be kind of more of a boyish figure. Then there is the apple shape, which tends to be larger on the top, maybe like bigger breast, wider rib cage, straighter hips, maybe stores more of their fat on their back or on their abdomen. Then you have the pear shape, which has small waist, narrow shoulders, nice ample booty and kind of like smallish breasts. And then you have something called hourglass, which is considered most of the time to be the most desirable female shape, where you have, I guess, a bit more of a wider shoulder than the pear, but not masculinely wide, small waist, and most of your weight tends to be in hips, thighs, and breasts. So if you want to have more of that shape, of course, working out is very good, toning the proper areas. Yoga is a great way to stay fit. It's not just good for your breathing and your stress level. It's also a way to keep fit, depending on the type that you do. Yin yoga and things like that, or restorative yoga or yoga nidra, are probably not going to tone you up. But if you do other types of yoga like kundalini yoga and ashtanga yoga and vinyasa and things like that, you're definitely going to be toning yourself up. And if you're eating the natural human diet, you're eating raw meat, you're eating raw dairy, it will fill your body out and your body will look more shapely. I can guarantee it. And of course, why do you think that Zog markets a plant-based diet and tells us to get injections in our asses, in our breasts, tells us to get implants in our asses, in our breasts? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because they want us to do those things. They want us to keep us away from the real secrets in this world, telling us, oh God, meat is bad for you. It'll make you ill. It contributes to climate change. It's not our natural diet. Meat is so cruel. You'll die from eating raw meat, raw eggs, and raw dairy. It's all this fear propaganda, all this fear porn to keep you away from your natural human diet. I mean, just think about it. Anyone who is really living in accord with nature, living close to the bone, any of these tribes, what are they eating? Raw meat and raw dairy, or at least a part of their diet is raw meat and raw dairy. Look at the Maasai of Africa. Their whole diet is like raw blood and raw milk. That's like a huge part of their diet. A treat for some of the children is when they mix the coagulated blood with milk and the children eat it off of a stick. That's like Maasai ice cream, right? So it's really important to understand just how many layers of deceptive filth are out there to keep us away from these real jewels. It's the Jew that's keeping us away from these jewels. So a little bit there about breast size and body shape and all that good type of stuff. And here's a little bit about how to dress with no bra. So here are some tips for you if you're thinking, you know what, I'm ready to give my bra up. How could I dress with no bra and go out in public and not have people, you know, honing in on my nipples? So here's a little bit of information. How to dress with no bra. Bras provide support and padding that can make clothing look more flattering. And of course, most clothing is designed to be worn with a bra. However, bras can also be uncomfortable and even get in the way of wearing some kinds of clothing, and that is certainly true. If you are considering a braless look, then it is important to consider what to wear. You may also benefit from using some tricks to hide your nipples and keep your breasts covered. If you are still on the fence about going braless, then there are some things that might help you decide if it's right for you. So number one is to choose what you're going to wear. Pick something out that makes you feel good. The most important thing to consider when choosing how to dress without a bra is how an outfit will make you feel. Don't wear anything that makes you feel uncomfortable or self-conscious, of course, goes without saying. Choose something that flatters your body, suits your style, and makes you feel great when you put it on. For example, if a low-cut top makes you feel self-conscious, then they're not the best choice for you. Try a low-back top or a spaghetti strap dress instead. Number two, try a classic no-bra top or dress. There are some types of tops and dresses that don't look as good with a bra, so wearing those when you go braless might be a good idea. Try wearing low-back or backless tops, or go for a strapless or spaghetti strap dress or top. Some other items that might look better without a bra include dresses and tops with plunging necklines, tops with laced up fronts, backs, or sides, tops and dresses with keyholes in the back, and halter tops and tube tops. Number three, look for items with built-in bras and support. Some items of clothing have built-in bras, breast cups, or elastic bands that eliminate the need for a bra. And this is true oftentimes of fitness types of gear. I have a couple of tops like this myself. Try looking for clothes that have some built-in support to make going braless a little easier. A tank top with a built-in bra can help you transition into bralessness. You can still wear them afterwards under sheer tops. Bodysuits and leotards provide built-in support to make cute additions to braless outfits. Try one under a thin button-down top for a breezy look. Another tip, consider wearing layered clothing for a braless look. Layers are a great way to go without a bra because you can hide your bralessness. This wardrobe technique is especially useful during the winter months. For this reason, winter might even be the best time to try going braless if you're nervous about the transition. Here are some ideas. A thick sweater to hide your nipples, so this might be a good braless clothing choice if you're worried about your nipples showing. A shirt over or under a long sleeve shirt is also a great braless combo. Jackets and cardigans are also other great layering options and can keep you warm when the weather takes an unexpected turn. Another tip is to hide your nipples when you go braless. You can buy nipple covers or tape that hide your nipples. One way to prevent your nipples from being visible through your clothing is to cover them up with nipple tape or pasties. You can find these in the lingerie section of many department stores or lingerie specialty stores. So you have a choice of doing that. Another option is to wear a thick top, a thick fabric top. Avoiding clothing that is made too sheer or too thin, because thin fabric could expose your nipples, especially if the fabric is light color. If you want to wear a top or a dress without a bra, try wearing it over an undershirt or a slip. Silk or satin tops may not be a good choice when you go braless because the material is thin and it may be too revealing. Or there are some people who might want to do that. I would probably advise against that, especially in this racially charged environment that we live in. I would avoid against that. And it's a shame that breasts have become so much of a sexualized object. Not to say that they're not sexual. Of course they're sexual. They're part of a woman's sexuality, and they're part of a woman's sexuality that men enjoy. No doubt about that. They also feed children. This is to say they're not sexual would be just be foolish. But the way the society has become, especially with the whole porn culture, which I am going to get into in a bit after I go through this article, we really do have to make sure to hide our nipples, especially living in a multiracial society with all different types of unsavories. That would be another reason why we would want to basically conceal our nipples. Not to say that anybody would ever be, wrong. Maybe wrong's a wrong word. Would be, at fault. Like they would be the one that was at fault for someone aggressing them because they didn't cover their nipples. Like basically saying, she got raped because she was wearing a mini skirt. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. It's wrong regardless, but especially now, we should very much be on our guard. Another idea for hiding your nipples when you go braless, choosing dark colors. Dark colors are less likely to become see-through in bright light or if your shirt becomes wet. If you will be outside on a sunny day and there's a chance of rain, wear tops that are made with dark fabric. Otherwise, your nipples may be visible through the fabric. Fabric with patterns, especially small patterns, may also help conceal your nipples. You could also use toupee tape, which they kind of use this in Hollyweird, which will keep your neckline in place. So that's another idea to use. You can also use surgical tape to keep your breasts in place. That sounds a bit kind of like what the trannies do when they're binding their breasts. Doesn't really sound very good to me, so I really wouldn't do that. Consider your clothing. You may want to consider going braless in tops or dresses, which your bra would peek out of if you wore one. Deep plunging necklines and large keyholes in the back and backless tops or dresses are all items of clothing that look better when worn without a bra. And if you're wearing anything that's synthetic, which I obviously wouldn't advise as your top option, like lycra or nylon, those work well without a bra because they're smooth and comfortable. It's always best to be wearing cotton stuff, whether you're wearing a bra or not. Examine the situation when wearing a bra or not. Job interviews and court appearances, meeting your partner's parents, maybe the first best time to go braless. I think that goes with saying. Don't worry about sagging. Talked about this earlier. There's no evidence about this. And ease into bralessness. If you want to start going without a bra more often, you may experience some discomfort since your breasts aren't used to being free to move. So you may want to go, like, let's say you're an underwire wearer. You may want to go from underwire to, let's say, non-underwire to bralessness. Like, you might want to taper yourself off, you know, as you go along. To ease into bralessness, try one of the following. Trade in your padded underwire for one with pads, without pads or underwire, and go braless at night or around the house until you feel more comfortable without your bra on. So those are some tips right there about how to go braless, which are good tips. Maybe that will help you in making this decision, because it's a freedom in really just not having yourself caged up all the time. The enemy wants us caged up. I think that's pretty obvious, especially with this Oyid thing with the darn mask. They want us all caged up, which is really terrible. So really, it's very important that we imbue as much freedom into our lifestyle as possible. Something else that you can do to yourself is a breast massage. This is typically not the type of massage that you're going to be getting when you go to a masseuse. And I think that type of stuff is still banned around here. But I mean, do this yourself, a breast massage. Or if you don't want to do it yourself, if you have a partner that wants to give you a breast massage, then have your partner give you the breast massage. This is a nice way to have a massage. You could also do a belly massage in conjunction with the breast massage. The breast massage will help with lymphatic draining, which is really important. Like we talked about the lymphatic system a little bit before. It can also help with easing depression because mild depression and stress are linked to low levels of oxytocin. Oxytocin is what's released. It's like a bonding hormone. It's released after sex, as well as during breastfeeding, childbirth, things like that. Contributes to happiness, euphoria, and connection to those events. So breast massage and stimulation also promotes the secretion of oxytocin and can have positive impacts on both instant and long-term mental health, stress reduction, and overall well-being. A breast massage will also reduce breast pain, cysts, and fibrocystic breasts. And here's a bit about that. Breast massage can be used as a tool to relieve pain and diminish cystic breasts or breast cysts. Although not often cancerous or immediately harmful, breast cysts are a sign that there is an imbalance in the body that should be addressed. They can occur as a single cyst or multiple. They're small sacs that are filled with fluid, air, or organic debris that can cause pain and discomfort. They sometimes are more prevalent and painful during ovulation or during the menstrual cycle and disappear once your period has finished. Breast massage can help break down the tissue holding the cyst together and dissolve the lumps. And this is stuff that allopathy can never do. And well, they're probably not going to tell you. Breast massage can also prevent breast cancer. Breast cancer can occur when healthy cells mutate into abnormal cells and develop into cancerous growths. The use of breast massage as a preventative measure works by stimulating abnormal cell activity into their healthy state. And there we see right there that you can stimulate abnormal cells back into their healthy state. And the same thing can be said of bacteria. Of course, allopathy wants us to believe that what do we have to do? We have to kill and destroy anything that's abnormal or mutated, right? Which doesn't work like that. This can potentially reduce the possibility of a cancerous growth. Massage also stimulates the production of serotonin, dopamine, lymphocytes, and NK cells, which actively decrease cortisol levels, our stress hormone, and help to fight cancerous cells. Breast massage also stimulates breast tissue and maintains the health of breast tissue. This form of self-care decreases sagging associated with breastfeeding and age because prolactin is released and circulated and circulation is increased. Breast massage can also help increase breast size. And I was going to talk about that before when I talked about eating our natural human diet. So in lieu of having some kike or someone who's kikeified, cut open your breasts and put a bag inside of them. You can get a breast massage from your partner or give it to yourself, and you can eat your natural human diet. And here are some good oils for massaging on your breasts. These are kind of the traditional Ayurvedic oils. I'll go through the list. Some of these I probably don't agree with, but I'll go through it anyway. Sesame oil. I know it is a seed oil, but we're not eating it orally. So we're just, you know, having it go on our skin. Of course, there is a bit of transdermal action going on, but nevertheless, this is the least offensive of all the seed oils. And it's a moisturizing, nourishing oil, and it's very traditional. So I like to use a little bit of sesame oil in preparations like this, also on the hair and also for oil pulling. It's only a little bit of it was really going into the system. So sesame oil is the Ayurvedic one that's number one. Another one would be almond oil, which is very high in vitamin E, helps reduce stretch marks on the breasts and is a lighter oil. So it can also help in cases of clogged milk ducts, known as mastitis, or any type of infection, because it's really good at releasing anything from clogging the pores. Jojoba is another good oil because it's packed with various vitamins and nutrients. Jojoba is also really good because it has a similar composition to the natural sebum in the human skin. So that's a great choice. It's also very mild. So if anyone has any skin sensitivity, jojoba would be the one to use. And of course, like I said, these are not animal oils, but we can use plant oils in a smart way. I obviously wouldn't suggest cooking in these oils, but we're using them for breast massage, so it's very different. And they recommend some other ones, additional oils. Castor oil, I can't say that I would really recommend that. That's high in ricin, which is a toxin. Evening primrose oil, I wouldn't recommend that either because that could be estrogenic. Lavender and calendula. Lavender, no, because estrogenic. Calendula, that would be okay. It's very soothing, but you don't really need it. You can just use the plain oil. Violet oil, I don't know too much about that. It says lymphatic drainage. For me, if I was going to do this, I would just use plain oil or I would use rose oil. I'd take a little bit of rose oil and I would add that to my sesame, almond, or jojoba. I would probably lean more towards sesame or almond, and I'd add a little bit of Oracasha, that's the brand that I typically buy, a little bit of rose oil to the almond or sesame oil and use that as a breast massage. Rose is a very feminine scent. It's perfect for breast massage, for belly massage, very soothing, very feminine, very beautiful. And now it goes into how to do a breast massage. I'm not going to lead everyone through that, but there are many articles on the internet that you can seek out if you're interested in doing this, doing a breast massage. But just know it's very beneficial for you. It is totally free. And all you need is a little bit of sesame, almond, or jojoba oil. And if you're feeling fancy, a little bit of rose oil. So something definitely to think about. It's healthy for your breasts. It's good for depression. It can make your breasts bigger. I think it's a win-win type of situation. Okay, let's see what else I have for this broadcast. Getting a bit ample in length, about the hour 30 mark right here. Okay, so I already went over about bras and breast cancer a little bit. I have another article about it, but I don't think it's really necessary to really go over it in depth. I will just read a couple of highlights from here. It says that 80% of bra wearers who experience lumps, cysts, or tenderness will see those symptoms vanish within a month of getting rid of the bra. Yowza. That's really amazing when you think of that. Plus, you'll save a lot of money. Think about how much money these bras are. You know, if you get one of these bras from Victoria's Secret, they could be like $60. And well, Victoria's Secret is that she's a tranny. I'm convinced that most of the women who are doing that modeling aren't even women. And I think now they're actually outwardly saying that some of the models are actually men. So you got to know if they're going to be out there telling us something, that it's actually happening, it's probably been going on for a very long time. So that would be one thing why you want to give up a bra. 80% of bra wearers have all those wonderful experiences of getting rid of a lump or cyst or tenderness in just 1 month of getting rid of a bra. That is really, really amazing when you think about it. Another company that makes bras that's a bit more affordable than Beyond Yoga, and they have not, I think, supported BLM as far as I know. There is a company called Decent Exposures. I have not bought from them before. Oh, I do see they're making masks now. Well, everyone's making masks. Whatever. If we limit everything we buy, we're probably going to be, well, naked or making all our own clothing. And I'm not ready to be naked, and I'm not ready to make all my own clothing at this point in my life. But nevertheless, this is a good company. They haven't supported BLM. I'd sooner buy from a company that supported Oyid than BLM in all seriousness. I think that makes better sense, even though I would wish that they wouldn't support either of them. But anyway, this company, Decent Exposures, kind of a play on the Indecent Exposures type of phrase, they make bras, underwear, swimwear, activewear, all this type of stuff. And these bras are known for being extremely comfortable, and they come in all different sizes. So if your breasts are on the small side or if they're really big, you can get any type of bra that you want. They also sell camis, like camisoles, tankinis, nursing pads, sweat pads, all this type of stuff. And their bras start at $39, so a little bit less expensive than Beyond Yoga. And you can get them in all different types of styles. So if you like a scoop back, you can get that. Strapless, racer back, front closure, nursing flap, lycra ribbing. So whatever you like, you can get it. So if ladies, if you're interested, that's Decent Exposures. Like I said, I haven't tried them out yet, but I remember seeing adverts for this company in like magazines that I used to read in the 90s. So they've been around for a really long time, and you can pick all different types of fabrics for yourself as well. And they're cute. They're not like push-up bras. Like, they're not like, you know, the ones that you see that are like outwardly considered very sexy. But it's a lot sexier to have healthy breasts than to wear something that pushes them up, that's going to cause all types of medical problems, where you'll eventually, most likely, if you don't know any better, go to Zog for treatment, in parentheses, and then you'll end up, you know, in a worse place than beforehand. So just something to think about right there. Okay, and then the last thing I had for this broadcast, let's see, right here. I have a little bit about breast taboo and how we live in a culture where there's a lot of breast taboo. We definitely do, and breasts are, like I talked about earlier, very sexualized, but the whole pornography pogrom really does this with the taboo of breasts. In other parts of the world where they just walk around with their breasts out, they don't have this taboo. And I'm pretty sure that most of us who grew up here in, you know, the West, for lack of a better word, if we walked outside our house and we saw someone completely topless, we would be shocked. First, we'd be shocked, and then many of us would say, oh my God, it's my lucky day, right? But in other parts of the world, they wouldn't be shocked, and they wouldn't think it was their lucky day, because it's every day they would see that. So here's a little bit about breast taboo. In North America and many other westernized countries, a woman's breasts are taboo. They are supposed to be hidden. Exposing women's breasts in public is considered shameful and inappropriate, indecent exposure. Even on beaches or while breastfeeding. In other words, breasts, or at least the nipple, are supposed to be covered all the time. Remember, probably, what was that, maybe a decade ago when that whole thing happened during the Super Bowl where Janet Jackson's nipple was visible? I think it was Justin Timberlake who, like, during some type of dance move, pulled off her top. It was probably all supposed to happen. Who knows? Who cares? But it exposed her nipple, and then everyone saw her nipple was pierced, and everyone was talking about it like it was a big thing. A nipple. Could you imagine people getting this bent at a shape about a nipple? They should get this bent at a shape about Oyid or the racial crisis. Parents tend to teach their children the same way, and many children don't see a single naturally nude breast apart from their own while growing up. It is totally possible that a child grows up in North America and never sees a baby breastfeeding. Well, maybe unless they have a younger sibling, they'll see it. However, while exposing breasts in public is a no-no, children and young people often see breasts, although practically never the nipple, displayed in a sexually provocative fashion on the Talmud Vision, on the internet, and in magazines. And that's a really good point. You never see a full breast, but you'll always see a sexualized breast. Breasts are actually emphasized in the adverts, which signals our young people that breasts are a sexual object and supposedly only beautiful when big and protruding. However, we know the larger breast in the media is often just a fallacy, since the models and actors use push-up bras and breast enlargement to artificially enhance the way their breasts look. Besides that, the photographs are always airbrushed to look just right. Just think, if young girls continually see this propaganda without a balanced view of natural naked breasts, it is no wonder they also start seriously worrying about the size and shape of their own breasts, even to the point of suicide. It says here on the side that when girls as young as 12 talk about getting breast implants on this standard, I say we have a serious problem. I agree. And women who do greatly worry about their breast size as proven by the huge amount of augmentation surgeries. According to the American Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgery, in 2006, 383,336 women had breast augmentation. This number was 318,000, 123,000 for the year 2010, possibly down because of economic downturn. Even at the age of 27, I have probably only seen about 10 or 15 pairs of real breasts. Most of my knowledge about breasts comes from the movies and the magazines, but actresses use body doubles to give the illusion of a more perfect body, and photographs of models have been airbrushed to remove any unsightly bumps or discoloration. It's a bit about that. Three 14-year-old girls have told me separately that they need breast enlargement surgery, with nothing to base this body hatred on but a stolen copy of Playboy. How can we say that to view a woman's breast will damage children when it is so clear what not seeing them is doing to them? I would say most women are not happy with their breasts. I look at a bunch of slides of women's breasts as part of a slideshow I put together, and every single woman who took off her shirt for me had something to say, like, my breasts used to be great, now they're saggy, I've got the smallest ones you've ever seen, and they're not happy. But as you know, of the women I interviewed, the ones who were happiest with their breasts were when they were breastfeeding. They weren't thinking about, are they too small, are they too big? It was just doing something wonderful. And here's a bit about breast obsession with men. While nearly all women in the U.S. are worried or even obsessed about their breast size and shape, a lot of men have definite obsessions with female breasts. To them, breasts have become a source of sexual fantasy / turn-on. For these men, it is not just a general attraction to the whole female figure or an appreciation of the various body parts, but a fetish or an extreme fixation or an obsession. They get sexually inspired by looking at pictures with cleavage, where breasts are enticing, almost visible, yet hidden. While these men probably realize that this is happening, they feel they are enjoying it, and they are nevertheless bound to this behavior. And just think of the pornographic genres that focus on huge breasts. Think about some of the women out there who have like the humongous, like cartoon-shaped breasts, and they're able to make an income just from the fact that men will actually go to their site or their webcam and just see them play with their boobs. Like, it's really pretty mind-boggling. The general breast taboo and the provocative visual images in the Zio media greatly encourage men to view breasts as objects of sexual arousal and play. Men are actually being conditioned to see breasts as sexual. Breasts almost become like inanimate objects to them to automatically click in their brains into turn-on mode. And this kind of works with the whole objectification thing too, which of course the Jews want us to objectify our women because, well, they objectify their women and women in general. This obsession is to be distinguished from a general appreciation of breasts and for what they are, a source of nourishment and comfort for children. Boys who were breastfed as babies have a deep-seated built-in appreciation for women's breasts due to the child-mother relationship. This feeling then enhances a man's sexual feelings towards a woman, but it is not in itself a major source of arousal. The arousal happens more because of the whole woman, not because of some specific part, and that, of course, is a lot healthier. Images in the media are completely screwed up, of course. The corrupted view of breasts is designed to make men more and more subject to the attacks of sexual adverts and entertainment. This propels men to sexual indulgence and women to become more sexually enticing, in which both become morally destitute and often victims of criminal acts. Surely our very genetics make more fit bodies appealing, but sexual obsession with nudity, and particularly breasts, has been planned into parentheses, to spike our natural tendencies into money-making impropriety. And of course, we know that the nose is behind this. So who benefits from this taboo of female breasts? That is not hard to answer. The pornographic industry. And of course, I'm sure many of us know that the pornographic industry is run by Jews. The pornographic industry can now earn good money by showing men bare breasts so they cannot see them elsewhere. So let's say someone's like a MGTOW guy, let's say he has terrible luck with the ladies. Anytime he wants, he can just go on the internet via his mobile phone and see breasts anytime he wants to. And truly, if this taboo was any less, for example, if topless sunbathing was widely accepted and practiced, everybody would know how female breasts look, and men would become desensitized, and the sales of porn publications would plummet. Fortunately, not all men are obsessed in this manner. And that, I guess, is true. I guess it depends on the guy, of course. I can't comment on that because I'm not a man. But I'm sure that this breast fetish definitely is something that fuels porn addiction. And here's a bit about breasts in other cultures. European women commonly go topless on the beach, and many European countries also have nudist beaches where people sunbathe naked, and yet atmosphere is decent and non-sexual, and people are at ease. In Finland, people are used to seeing nude bodies due to their sauna culture, and they don't view breasts as a taboo. Primitive tribes in the hot climates also wear very little clothing, and it's no big deal to them. And here below, they show some ladies of the Himba tribe in Namibia who go topless all the time. And that's just part of their look. It's not like they're actually showing their breasts off and trying to evoke like a sexual feeling in people. This is just what they do. And people who aren't familiar with the Himba, they are a tribe in Namibia, Africa, who take red clay and goat butter and coat their hair, and it kind of looks like they have dreads. It's a really interesting, cool look for their hair, but here they're showing three women, and they're just hanging out. They got the clay in their hair, they're wearing some type of skirt, they're wearing necklaces, and their breasts are just out, and it doesn't look perverse. Of course, if this was a picture in the West, it might look like they were half-dressed. Naturalists from all over the world always emphasize how sexuality does not equal nudity. That's right, nude does not equal naked, I guess, right? Nudity is not sexually stimulating if the atmosphere and the attitudes are non-sexual. In fact, seeing bare breasts on a topless beach can desensitize men's minds and do away with the automatic connection of breasts equals sexual stimulation. And nothing is wrong with seeing breasts, of course. It's a beautiful part of the female body. But let's let them be like the legs, the hips, the necks, and the face, and other parts of the female, and not like some nearly inanimate object that automatically click men's brains on to the turn-on mode. Well, I would say I somewhat agree with that, but I guess breasts have just been kind of, I mean, they're not genitals. That's the thing. Sometimes people think that breasts are genitals. They're not. Genitals are penis and vagina. The breasts and the anus are not vaginas, but they've been sexualized. And in a way, the anus is actually a really good example of this, because we've seen in most of our lifetimes, especially with this sodomy pogrom that the enemy is promoting, that now the anus has been sexualized. The exhaust pipe, the waste pipe of the body, has now become sexualized via the promotion of sodomy and Jewish pornography, as well as all these people getting these big booties, these ass implants. So we've seen firsthand the sexualization of the anus in our society, and they've been doing the breast sexualization for a long time. Pretty crazy stuff when you put it that way. So just a little food for thought right there about breast taboo and breast sexualization. Perhaps you hadn't thought about this before, so maybe something to think about now. So I think that's where I will leave off right now for this broadcast. I hope this was an interesting broadcast for you, a little different, a little thought-provoking, but nevertheless, information that should be out there, not information that you're going to hear from many sources because, well, it's just not possibly available for people to find this type of stuff, or maybe they just don't even know that these ideas exist. Quite possibly it's more of the latter than the former. So I'll be signing out now. I thank you for listening to this broadcast. Be sure to find and listen to all the wonderful broadcasts over here at the one and only American National Radio Network. I'm wishing everyone a lovely day, and I will catch you on the next broadcast. Goodbye, everybody.